Why did nobody ask any questions? I am white. He is black. Are you guys insane? Like, I would, like, this is literally the easiest thing that you can tell that, okay, that's not the child's father.
Hello, you are listening to NPE Stories. This is a podcast where NPEs can share their story. I am your host, Lily, and I found out I was an NPE through an ancestry DNA test that changed my life forever. NPE is a term that stands for not parent expected or non-paternal event. This means that one or more of our parents are not who we believe them to be. NPE Stories is a podcast where NPEs can share their story of what their original family was like, how they found out they were an NPE, and what their journey has been like since the day they found out. And welcome to episode 185. And thank you to those of you that are patrons of the NPE Stories Patreon page. I have a little over a dozen of you helping me out with my server fees, my hosting fees, and you guys are donating. And it's just so generous. I really appreciate you guys so much. If you want to donate or check out my Patreon page, you can go to patreon.com/NPE stories. And now we are going to get into our NPE story today. And today I'm speaking with Chantel. Hi, Chantel.
Hi, Lily. How are you?
I'm good. I'm freezing just like you are.
Yes, it is cold.
We are both northern people. You are Canada. Yes. I'm Minnesota. Where in Canada?
So I'm in just east of Toronto, Ontario. And we had a very late winter this year, but it is here.
Same. We barely had snow, but we have like negative 10, 15 wind chill, something like that.
Same. Yeah. Same here. Mm-hmm.
You might even be negative 20.
Yeah. But you know what is hovering around that negative 15, negative 20. So I'm staying inside.
Same. Same. Well, thank you so much for being willing to share your story today. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Mm-hmm. Thanks for having me. It's been a little bit of a wait. I was excited and I almost forgot about it for a little bit. And then I'm like, no, I think it's still happening. So we're good.
Yes. And I kind of purposely try not to read too much of people's backstories. Mm-hmm. So I will need everything from the beginning from you. And I'd just like to hear about who was in your family of origin and a little bit of what your childhood was like, and then we will go from there.
Okay. All right. So I guess I'll just jump right in. So I was born and raised in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and born in 1983. My family was not a conventional family by any means. I grew up with only my mother's family, and I was raised by my mother's mother, so my maternal grandmother. So the story goes that my grandparents, so my maternal grandparents, came to Toronto, Ontario, Canada in the mid-50s on a boat with many other immigrants from Italy. And at the time, they only had one child, which was my mother, and she was just 9 months old, and so they wanted to start, I guess, a life in Canada. There was a lot of people leaving Italy around the 50s, in the mid-50s, to come and settle. There was Australia, Canada, and the United States. They're just kind of like doing a mass exodus because times were really rough for them. So, yeah, my grandparents did that. And my mother, unfortunately, on the boat on the way over, contracted polio. And so she, for her whole life, was paralyzed from the waist down. And that kind of, it's not really relevant, but it's part of the story because it's part of the reason why she wasn't able to care for her kids, I'm assuming. So my grandparents ended up having another child and then divorcing after that. So it was just my mother and her sister. And then my grandmother remarried and had three more kids. And then that marriage didn't work out. And then she kind of remarried again. And that's the grandfather that I grew up with. So my grandmother and then her, I guess, third husband. My mom, because of the polio, she grew up primarily in a children's hospital, and she would come home on weekends and she would visit her parents, well, her mom and her siblings. And it was, so it was five girls and my grandmother and her husband. And my mom would do this back and forth until she was about 16. And then she aged out of this program. So I don't know if other countries have this sort of a thing, but I guess, and I don't even know if it's still available, but back in the day, I guess if you had a kid that had like was very special, like had special needs or like physical disabilities, they could like stay at a residential like hospital. I don't know, like the kids would live there during the week. So that's what my mom did. And then she'd come home on the weekend.
She had a rough life. And that's kind of where I'm going with all of this. So polio since birth, like, well, not birth, but 9 months of age, you know, they are new immigrant parents to Canada. They don't speak the language. Things are really rough at home between my grandparents. My grandfather couldn't find work. He was quite abusive toward my grandmother. So this all kind of plays into their story and how things unfold for them and the dynamic of the family and the relationships between my grandparents and the kids, especially my mom. So grandfather is not doing well, abusive, drinking a lot, beating my grandmother. And that's part of the reason why she ended up leaving him and having the three other kids with another guy. And then of course that didn't work out. And then, so yeah, I'm kind of going back and forth again, but this is how she ended up with the third guy who, that wasn't a great relationship either. So he was a married man with another family in Italy. Like he had his own separate family in Italy, but he was also having a second life with my grandmother and her five kids. So there was just a lot of dysfunction, a lot of uneasiness. So my grandmother was trying her best, I guess, to just survive. Like, again, I think back then, not having much family support and then having these kids and then having my mom in the hospital, like in my mind, I want to be judgmental and be like, why did you keep having kids? Like, why didn't you stop? And then I've actually asked her that. And she's like, well, you know, I tried taking birth control, but I wouldn't remember to take the pill. And then, you know, oh, I'm pregnant again. And I'm like, but five? Anyway, so she kept having kids and kept kind of going, moving on from one relationship to the next. Then she lands on the guy that I knew as my grandfather. Well, I knew he wasn't my biological grandfather, but we all called him Poppy, and we all kind of just, he became kind of like my aunt's dad, and he became my grandfather. And then he had another family in Italy, and he would kind of go back and forth, and he would leave us. And so it was, I'll get to that point. But so my mom coming back from the hospital now on the weekends and being in this really uncomfortable dynamic, because there'd be a lot of arguing between her mom and her stepdad, which is Poppy. And there would be a lot of abuse taking place in the home where my grandmother wasn't able to, I guess, manage her emotions. And she would have daughters a lot. And she would disappear for a couple days on end and come back. And the kids would be kind of fending for themselves. And then my mom would be coming home on the weekend, seeing this and feeling very uncomfortable. And so she eventually didn't really want to come home on the weekends anymore. And it was just a really uncomfortable situation for her, but she loved seeing her sisters and she longed to be part of like her family, right? She would, you know, see her father from time to time because he would come and visit her in the hospital. But unfortunately, like I mentioned earlier, like he was a very unhealthy man with the drinking and the abuse and all of that. And I found out later and inherited my mother's journals. So when she just, you know, bit of a spoiler alert, when she passed away, I inherited those things. So we found out that he was actually molesting her every time he would go into, and I don't know if I should, maybe you want to insert a trigger warning here for like child abuse, but he would go to the hospital and visit her and he would take her to the bathroom and he would molest her. And so this went on for a very long time and she didn't say anything because she was scared. So this is again, just kind of trying to paint a picture here for what my mother's life was like.
Yeah.
And when she did ultimately come out with it, when she was much older, my grandmother didn't believe her. She called her all kinds of names. And again, going back to my grandmother was a very dysfunctional individual. I think she had a lot of emotional stuff going on. There was a lot of like, you know, her hardships from coming from another country, having, you know, resettle, not speaking the language, financially not being secure, having kids with this monster of a man, let's be honest, and then thinking that it would be better with the second husband
And it wasn't because, you know, although she had three more children with this new man, he was a pathological liar who used to cheat on her constantly. And that's why she ended up leaving the second one. But the excuse for the third one, I don't really know what that is. I don't know. Maybe she was looking for security or just needed a man in her life. I'm not sure. So anyway, that's kind of what was going on for my mother in hospital. It's like a kid's long-term care facility. They even have school in there. So the kids actually go to school in the hospital. It's like a whole thing, kind of like a boarding school with a hospital. So that happened for a while. And then, so she aged out of that hospital program and she went to move in with her mother and her siblings, and that didn't really work out for her. So she moved out on her own. So keeping in mind, my mother is paralyzed from the waist down. And now she's psychologically damaged because of the abuse from her father, the abuse that she's witnessing when she goes home on the weekends, the neglect that she's experiencing, the anxiety, the financial strain, all of that that's going on. Because my grandmother didn't work, so she sort of lived off of government funding, and they lived in government housing a lot of the time, and they would move quite often from place to place. Rent is due, she can't pay the rent, they've got to move. And the story repeats. So there's a lot of just upheaval, and the kids were unsettled, and she wasn't mentally available, emotionally available, or connected to her daughters, least of all my mother. It just seemed like my grandmother was always looking to fill some kind of sadness or void or unhappiness, and that she just didn't have the capacity to love her kids the way they needed it. She couldn't be present for them. She couldn't protect them. She was very much caught up in her own world, in her own life, her own trauma issues. And she would medicate with pills and shopping. She had a very bad shopping addiction. And on credit cards, she would borrow money, pawn her jewelry. Like, the story just went on. Like, the kids were just, didn't have lunches when they had to go to school. And I don't mean to rag on my grandmother, because I'm very aware that she had big time trauma. Like, that's not what this is about. It's just, again, like, I understand as an adult now, looking back, that must have been horrendous what she was going through with five mm-hmm. kids. And, you know, like, the men in her life that were showing up were total trash, let's be honest. So, yeah. I mean, yes, there's accountability, and there's like, we need to make sure that we're making good choices and take responsibility and stop making those mistakes again. But if you are just drowning in trauma and then like, it just keeps piling on. Like, I don't know. I mean, and back in the day, like, she was born in 1933. Like, they weren't really doing self-help anything. So mm-hmm. they didn't even have time to, like, they were more concerned about, you know, putting food on the table. They didn't have time to think about their feelings. And I feel like that kind of just perpetuated and continued. And it was just a matter of, you know, survive. Like, so I feel like that really continued on with my grandmother throughout her life and in the way that she lived. And she carried a lot of, like, I learned later on from back in Italy, because they were so poor. Like, they lived in a remote, like a rural area in southern Italy. Like, it was poor. It's not what you see on TV, like Milan and Rome and every, you know, like, it's really only a part of the country. She was from a place where it was in a time when it was really difficult even to get food on the table. Like, it was, you know, it was tough. And so they had to do a lot of scheming and a lot of, like, they wouldn't consider it lying or manipulating or cheating. They wouldn't consider it that, because that's just the way that people lived just to survive. But they would kind of, like, you know, charge extra for something when they know it shouldn't really cost that much, because they're trying to, you know, increase their profit margin if they have a little shop or whatever, because they're just trying to feed their family. But that's all, like, I mean, I don't know, that could be chalked up to business acumen, but it was a lot of scheming and a lot of different things that they used to do, lying, cheating, stealing, whatever. And then I feel like she carried a lot of that here. And so she would, you know, she would steal from the store, and she would take her kids with her when she did that kind of stuff. Like, I witnessed that kind of stuff. A lot of, like, embedded traumas and, like, fear. So anyway, let me just get back to my mom. She would see all this and she would hear about it and she was living it. And 16, she's like, okay, I'm going to try and live with my family. That really didn't work out. I don't know all the ins and outs and exactly how things really fell apart to where when she, like, moved out of the house. But I do know that at one point she left home and she started partying and drinking. And so she started drinking very heavily, partying a lot, and she got pregnant and she had a baby at, I think she was 16 or 17. the baby was given up for adoption. And that would be her first child. And was kind of never spoken about again. There's a period of time when I don't know what happened to her between 17 and about the time that she met the man who they said was my father. So she met this man, his name is Trevor, and she was in her early 20s. So Trevor is from Jamaican descent. So he's a man of color, and him and his family, his parents and grandparents and everything were born and raised in Jamaica. And they moved to Canada. My mother is Italian, as I said, so white lady. So this was an interracial relationship in the 80s, and it was tough for them at the time, even though things were kind of turning or whatever, like there was still racism. It was difficult for them to find a flat when they wanted to move in together. So they faced some adversity there, but they figured it out. They, you know, would rent a room in someone's house, and he didn't really work all that much. He wasn't a very good provider. So she was doing drugs and she was drinking heavily, and she started to do prostitution in order to survive. So this is the life that my mother ended up getting into. And I later found out that it was happening even before she met him. That was something that she just, I guess that's how she could support herself. She chose to do. I want to be careful because I feel like I don't give her an excuse for choosing that lifestyle just because she was disabled. That there's lots of people who are special needs and who are physically handicapped who don't lead a life like that. There are things that we can do. There are programs available. There's work that she was totally of sound mind. It's not like, you know, it was her legs that didn't work, but the rest of her did work. But she didn't have the support or the guidance, the support, none of that was existed. So she was just kind of flailing, and then an alcoholic, and then the traumas and all the everything. It was just so much bad stuff that I feel like, yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense that she's got a loser boyfriend who's into drugs and hitting her. And yeah, that makes sense that she's going to go and do that. So she started doing that, and they were together for a while. I don't exactly know the timeline, but in 81 is when my brother was born. So they had a son together in 81. And when my mother had my brother, Justin, she had him in the hospital and she left. She had him and then just left him there. And my grandmother and one of my aunts went to the hospital to pick him up and bring him home. Apparently she went off on some bender and she, you know, returned home to Trevor, and the two of them continued on. And my brother was being raised by my grandmother and one of my aunts at the time, who I think was only 18. So my grandmother and my aunt tag teamed it and helped to raise my brother. And then 2 years later, I came about. So my mother was still living with Trevor and they were still, I guess, together. So I was born and my mother and Trevor brought me home. So I'm my mother's third child. And when I asked later about why was I so special that I actually got to be, you know, brought home, the other kids were, my mother, you know, either couldn't or chose not to care for them. Trevor told me that my mother wanted to try. She had grieved the fact that she had these other kids and she couldn't or chose not to, whatever. And so I'll get into more of that. But so they brought me home and they lived in this, like, because I've seen children's aid reports. I ordered these reports later in life when I was digging all of this stuff up. And it said that they lived behind a laundromat, like behind a laundromat, there's like a room and it wasn't really fit for people to live, but that's where they lived. I don't know what that means. So apparently it just wasn't a great accommodation. So she cared for me for about 6 months and then she left me at home and didn't return. And so Trevor surrendered me to the Children's Aid Society. And that's basically equivalent to Child Protective Services in the States.
Okay.
And so I was given up and I was in foster care for about, I want to say 3 years. And I moved around a lot. I was given up and they sent me with one foster family and then they moved me to another one. And then my grandmother stepped in at one point and said, oh, I'll take her, and took me for a month, but then gave me back. And then, so I went to another foster family and I was little, like I was under the age of 5. And then eventually my grandmother shows up again and another one of my aunts steps in and says, oh, we got to fight to get Chantel back. And okay, fine. The judge says that we'd rather Chantel be with family than with strangers. So here you go, grandma, you can have custody. Even though your kids have been in the system, even though, mm-hmm. you know, we all know you're unfit. I don't know what the standard was back then, but it was definitely not what it is today. So yeah, that's where I was put. And my mother was in and out of my brother and my life. Always. She would appear, disappear. She sobered up in her 30s, but she was so traumatized and damaged that I don't know, like she was in therapy all the time, but she was very secretive. You know, she wanted her privacy. You know, she was handicapped and needed help, but would like push us away. And like, I would call her and say, hey, like, I'll come by and I'll cook for you and I'll clean for you. And it's like, oh, well, today's not good and tomorrow's not good. She's not going anywhere. Like, she doesn't work. It's not like she's got a whole lot going on in her life, but she was very big into secrecy and privacy. And I couldn't quite get to a place with her where I felt like we had that mother-daughter bond. It just never happened. And I always called her by her first name. I never called her mom. It didn't feel right. Growing up, we just weren't, like, we'd have periods of a couple of months here and there where we would be close, and then she would pull away. And then she'd come back into my life frantically calling me, like, you know, oh, I haven't been able to get a hold of you, and I called you yesterday, and why aren't you calling me back? And I'm like, whoa, like, I'm working, I've got a family, I've got this, I've got that, like, let's take a step back here. And then I would call her back, and then we'd have this dance where we would talk for a little while, and then she'd back up again, and then I'd go MIA so this went on. And she was like this with my brother as well. So my brother and I did not grow up in the same household. As I said, my grandmother and one of my aunts took him home from the hospital. But eventually my aunt married and started her own family, and she adopted my brother. She took him in, and her partner, who actually, funnily enough, she ended up marrying a man of color. And so my brother, who was visibly mixed, but like he was visibly mixed race, kind of just fit in so nicely. Not that it matters, but it was just interesting how that worked out, that mm-hmm. He kind of just fit in, you know. So my aunt and my uncle, they're still married happily many years later, and they've raised my brother. But my grandmother raised me with Poppy, remember, her third husband. So when the courts put me in my grandmother's custody, that she was with this Poppy man, who I came to know as my grandpa, and or be accepted as, you know, stepdad and step-grandfather. So my brother and I didn't really grow up together, but I spent a lot of time at my aunt's home. So my grandmother wasn't very maternal, and she would pawn me off any chance she got. I mean, she was much older too by then, I'll give her that. She was in her 50s. So, you know, caring for a small child must have been difficult for her. So I would be spending lots of time with my aunts. All of my aunts, they were all screwed up, taking drugs. Like, this story doesn't get any better. So if you're looking for a happy, it's not going to happen. But the good thing is that I'm okay now. But I think. But no. So yeah, I would visit my brother who was living at my aunt and her husband's house. They're not on drugs, but they were heavy into a particular religion. I'm not even going to mention it. But it kind of takes over their life, and it's very cultish. And yeah, so that's a whole other story. But I would have fun, because that's where some of my cousins were. And my uncle was so amazing. He would take us to like theme parks. And like, so I had fun when I was with my aunt and uncle. And my brother is an interesting fellow. He, unfortunately, because my mother, as I said, was a drinker and a partier, she drank when she was pregnant with him. And so he was diagnosed with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. And wasn't, you know, he's 40, I'm 40, so he's 42. He still lives in my aunt and uncle's basement. He doesn't work. He didn't finish high school. He smokes weed all day long. Like, he refuses to be medicated. And we all later found out that Trevor was schizophrenic. So there's components of that we're thinking my brother struggles with as well, because he hallucinates and stuff like that. And that has nothing to do with fetal alcohol syndrome. That's schizophrenia. That's other things. So mm-hmm. Unfortunately, my brother has been dealt a very bad hand. So growing up, just coming back to that, he was a very different boy. He was very different. He would hurt animals and things like that. And he would be very inappropriate with me and touching and sexual things and very, very odd behavior. So I would love going to visit my aunt and uncle because they would take me places, but then my brother was there. So we're not close. We don't talk. He was just, I won't get into that too much, but that's kind of what the dynamic was growing up with my brother. He's a very sick person.
Mm-hmm.
But then, so then my other aunts were on drugs. Like the other two aunts were really badly into drugs, and I would visit them and they would like leave me home to like take care of their kids. And I was way too young, or like they would, one of them would have me go downstairs to like, so they lived in apartment buildings. And I don't know if you're familiar with like the laundromat that they usually have in buildings, like in the basement, you can go do your, it's like a coin laundry. And so I remember my aunt would like send me downstairs and be like, hey, just go and take someone else's laundry. Right? Like, these are the things that they would do and like have the kid. Like, it's just mind boggling to me why my grandmother would allow me to keep going. Anyway, she was no better. So like my grandmother would be like, oh, we're going to the store. And then like, she'd be like, oh, don't do what you see me doing. And she'd be like stealing a bunch of stuff out of the store. So this is what I observed.
Wow.
The adults in my life, this is their behavior. Like, and then, like it just was not good. And then my mother would be like in and out. I remember visiting my mom growing up and like, she'd always be having like a new boyfriend. And then I was so confused because I'm like, what are they? She's like, she's got crutches. Like, she can't walk. Like, how are these guys, like, how is she getting all these boyfriends? And like, what does she have to, I mean, that sounds awful, but I'm just saying like, I don't know. Anyway, so, and then I remember being really little and her, like, we would like take trips in the night to go like spend the night at a boyfriend's house. And then I remember one time her like downing a whole handful of pills and trying to kill herself. Like, these are the things that I witnessed growing up. And she had a boyfriend over at the time and he was like helping her and like consoling her. And I just remember standing in the doorway, like watching my mom, like again, trigger warning, like suicide, whatever, but she's like trying to kill herself in front of me. And I had no idea, like, why is this happening? And why everywhere that I go is everyone so sick? No one gave a rat's ass about me or what I needed, or like I was just the baggage that they were kind of toting along. My grandmother and I, we moved around quite a bit. Ultimately, my grandfather, Poppy, ended up leaving us when I was 12 years old, and he left for good that time. So as I said, he had another family in Italy and he would kind of leave for a month or two. My grandmother would go searching for him and drag him back home. And then eventually, he dropped us off at the dentist one day and then never came back. And then she went into a deep, dark depression that lasted a long time. And then she was never the same. She moved on to another boyfriend who was an alcoholic and used to beat her. That was another story. So we moved in with him for a little while, and that was a lot of fun. And then we just kept moving around. Eventually, I think I counted 17 places by the time I was 18. That's how many times we had moved. So I moved out when I was 18. That's kind of when I started to think about things, and I had some space and distance from the family. And growing up, I realized that I never really looked like my biological, who I thought was my biological father. He's not my biological father, obviously, but I didn't grow up with him. Like, after I was born and he surrendered me to Children's Aid, he moved back to Winnipeg to be with his family, because that's when the mental illness started to really kick into high drive. And I think someone had contacted his mother or whatever to say, listen, you need to get Trevor back home and put him in a hospital. Like, he needs help. He's sick. So he went back to Winnipeg and never came back to Toronto. So I never met Trevor until I was 13 and my brother was 15. He and his mom came into town for a wedding, and that's the first time. And I remember looking at Trevor. So this is before I moved out away from home. I'm kind of going back a little bit. And I looked at him, and so he's this tall, dark, handsome man. And I'm white. I'm a European, like, I've got olive skin and dark hair, dark eyes. But my brother is very visibly mixed, as I mentioned before. He's got the beautiful curly, you know, tightly curled hair, and just looks exactly like a mixture of my mother and who I thought our father was. And I remember saying at that meeting, when Trevor came to visit, my brother and I went off to his room because I just think we needed some space. And I said, like, how come I don't look like him? And he goes, I don't know. And that was it. And then I started developing a relationship with Trevor and his mom for about 10 years. 13, I meet Trevor and his mom, building this relationship now that I know who they are. We exchange phone numbers. They come to visit. I fly to Winnipeg. I'm having this relationship with Trevor and his mom. I'm a teenager. I'm getting to know them. I go to visit them. I'm sitting down at the table with them eating, and I'm looking at them and I'm looking at myself, and I'm like, do you have any pictures of like grandparents? Because I'm trying to figure out, who do I look like? And, you know, I have this really like sort of long nose, doesn't look anything like theirs, look nothing like them. And so my grandmother would say, you know, well, we have Scottish in our blood and we've got white grandparents and things like that. And, you know, she'd say, well, you have, you know, you're, she made a joke, you know, you have a backside like a black girl. These are the comments, you know, she would make. And she'd sort of, and I'm like, okay, well, okay. And then I even asked my uncle who was visiting. He said, you know, like, why don't I look like anybody? And I remember the dumbest comment. He's like, oh, you're, you know, he said something along the lines of you've paved your own way, or you've got your own style. It was the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like, it made no sense. But they all accepted me. And so I accepted it. And then I meet my husband. So I'm remarried. I'm on my second marriage now. I was married in my early 20s to a man who would question these things. And he would say, oh, you know, Chantal, like, that can't be your father. You know, that you look nothing like him. I have my son at 23. I'm 23 years old. I have my son, Andre. And that same year, I fly to Winnipeg. And I get a DNA test done on my supposed father, Trevor. And it was all kind of very underhanded. And in hindsight, I wish I hadn't been so sneaky about it, because this is the thing. I guess in the back of my mind, I knew that something was wrong. And I felt like if I told my grandmother what I was doing and she found out, she'd be really offended and she wouldn't be in her life anymore. And I cherished our relationship. I cherished what we had built over the last decade. And my father was kind of secondary in this whole thing, because when I would visit my grandmother, we'd have to go and like track him down at whatever group home he was living at. And I would see him for, you know, a few minutes here or there. But I spent most of my time with my grandmother when I went to visit. And so it was her really that I had this bond with. And I'm talking about Trevor's mom, right? And so my husband had put this in my head, and he's like, there's no way, there's no way. So when I had my son and he came out quite fair as well, because I was thinking, well, maybe the color skipped a generation. But that's not the case. And my husband was actually also biracial. So we're thinking, well, then my son will come out darker. No way. He came out, you know, just as light as me. And it was just, so flew to Winnipeg. So I ordered this kit. It was off of this, it's a call in at the time. There was no Ancestry back then in 2007. There was none of that Ancestry, family tree DNA, MyHeritage, yeah. You know, none of that existed. But there were like at home DNA kits, like paternity kits, as tests that you could buy. And it took like 6 weeks for you to get the test and 8 weeks for you to get the results. So I order this kit. It's a swab thing. Fly to Winnipeg just for the day. And I'm lying to my grandmother, telling her I'm flying out because I've got this test in my hand and will tell me the likelihood that my son will develop schizophrenia. Because remember, Trevor's schizophrenic.
Yeah.
So he was formally diagnosed and he's been medicated. Like, I don't know where he is now, but he's been on medication. Like, he's very, very sick. And she goes, oh, okay, well, fine. So I did that. I went, she coordinated the whole thing, tracked him down, brought him to the apartment. I swabbed his mouth, swabbed my mouth, sent in the kit, the test. Test results came back. He's not my father. Not my father, 100, like 99.99%. They test so many markers and there was absolutely no matching anything on any of those things. So I call my mother and again, we have a tumultuous relationship. It's on again, off again. We're not very close. They did a DNA test. Angie, her name is Angie. It says that Trevor's not my father. Can you please explain what's going on? And I can hear her voice in my head. I don't know what you're talking about, Chantal. You're scaring me. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about right now? Excuse my language. I don't know how I'm scaring you. I've just provided you with information about my DNA. He's not my father. So can you please tell me who my father is and what the hell is going on? She couldn't answer me, Lily. She's like, I don't know what you're saying. I don't know what's going on. There could be no one else. I'm like, okay, well, obviously there is. And I even went so far as to say, I know that you've had a very hard life and that there's some things, because she never openly talked to me about the days when she was a prostitute or when she was a drunken mess, even though I witnessed that. I witnessed her drunk mm-hmm. and swallowing pills. And I witnessed all of that. Like, we never had those conversations. So I said, like, I understand that you had a really hard life and that there are some times that maybe you might not have remembered maybe what was going on. Is there a possibility that maybe you know you met someone and that maybe you just don't remember? Is there a possibility? She's like, no, there's no one else it could be. So this is like the gaslighting and the whole, you know, there was nothing I could do. There's nothing. Yeah. I had to let it go. I got around to the family that I had done this and they were telling me that I was a troublemaker, that I was stirring. You know, why do I want to bring this up? What difference does it make? Who does this affect? It doesn't change anything. You know, your mother said that's who your father is, so that's who your father is. But then I brought it to the next level and I said to my mother, I have my birth certificate here. Why is my father's section blank? But not only is it blank, it's been tampered with. Someone cut up, you know, there's the mother section and the father section. So yeah. The father section of the birth certificate had been, someone cut out a piece from a blank birth certificate and pasted it over top of the information that was on my birth certificate. The lines didn't even match up, Lily. And you can see the pen under peeking underneath because it was a photocopy. Hmm. And I called the ministry of whoever the government agency that keeps all of these things. Nope, that's the original. We have no other on file. So there was no way that I could even get my hands on the original. Apparently after a certain year, they scanned all of these documents up into a computer system. So they no longer had like the physical copies of them. It was just like a scanned version and that's all I could get. So I ordered that and it was the same thing I already had, which is this where the lines aren't even matching up on the document. And you can see that there's writing underneath it peeping out. It was ridiculous. So I asked her, explain this to me. Of course, she doesn't know what I'm talking about. And then I said, well, then, and also, why didn't you give me Trevor's last name? So this is another key piece of information, because when she had my brother, she gave my brother Trevor's last name, which is Williams. So my brother is Justin Williams. When I was born 2 years later, she was still with Trevor. She gave me Chantel Yalassi. That's my last name. She didn't have, there was no Williams. There was no Williams. I don't even have a middle name. My brother has middle names that are my father's first, that were his father's first name, like Justin, Trevor. He's got all of his dad's names in his, and I have no middle name, and I have my mom's maiden name. And I asked her and she said, I don't know. Everything is I don't know. So I brought this up to my grandmother and the family and everything. And they're just, well, you know, we did not. And I said, why didn't you ask any questions? Why did nobody ask any questions? I am white. He is black. Are you guys insane? Like, I would, like, this is literally the easiest thing that you can tell that, okay, that's not the child's father. Like, there's like difficult, some moms have like a type and they like cheated on their spouse and then, but the spouses are both like Caucasian or whatever. And so like, you know, you could kind of, they both have black hair. And so you can kind of get away with it. This is like a far-fetched, like you literally have a boy who comes out mixed race and then you have a girl who comes out completely white, but you're saying that the father is this black guy. Like, are you on crack? Mm-hmm. So anyway, they all said, well, you know, that's what I've accepted, that they didn't even know what was going on in their own life, much less to ask any questions about what was going on in mine. They didn't care about me, number one. And, you know, maybe they thought, because I was very pigmented and I still am. And then that's because of my European. So my mother is Italian. And then I later found out, I'll get to that in a minute, the other side is also European, and these people are generally very pigmented. So that really went nowhere. Just to sum this all up, my grandmother was upset that I was stirring the pot, and you know, it was all my fault and whatever. So I had to let that die. But at least I knew that he wasn't my father. And fast forward a few years, my ex and we separated, divorced. I knew my current husband. We've been together for 14 years. We have a child together. We get married. And I'm still in contact with grandmother, but we have the conversation and, you know, to be honest, it's a long story, but just to sum it all up, my ex-husband, when my grandmother came for a visit, so this is after I had had my son, I had done the DNA test and everything like that, and I lied about the reason why I was doing it. She came to visit while I was away for the house. I think I was getting groceries or whatever. He and her had a conversation. And he divulged to her the real reason why I flew to Winnipeg to have the DNA test was to have the DNA test. So when I came home, I was ambushed. My grandmother was like, this is, why would you do that? You can't tell DNA by saliva. You know, I could have taken you to a clinic. We could have done it properly with a blood test. And so she didn't believe it. She actually didn't believe the DNA test. She thought it was not true, and she still accepted me as her granddaughter. Even though the information was there and it was out, she still accepted me. But then when we fast forward, I've moved on, and I think she's had time to settle, and a couple of years have passed. She's kind of brewing on it. Now I have this other child, and she's kind of bringing it up, and she's upset. And she's saying, you know, Chantel, I feel hurt by what you've done. You know, the only way I can really reconcile this and continue this relationship with you is if you change your birth certificate and add Williams as your last name. I was very perplexed because I said, well, first of all, I've never had that name ever. I don't know why I would add that now at this point in my life. Number two, we've already established that the DNA shows that I'm not actually biologically your granddaughter. I want to be your granddaughter. If we can still have this relationship, I don't see why we have to let, you know, blood interfere with that. Like we've known each other as grandmother and granddaughter for like how long now? Like why? No, I can't do it. So she cut me out of her life at that point because I refused to change my name to something that was not my name. And that was really hard for me because I loved her and I knew she loved me. But I think it was just too difficult for her. I think she felt betrayed. I think she felt bamboozled. Like, you know, these people have, she felt like a joke, you know, because it was a lie and everything was a lie. But not even so much the lie that it was not my fault. Like, I'm not the one who lied to her about, you know, this is your granddaughter. Like, no, I mean, it was my mother who, you know, caused that. But she just, I think she was just so hurt, you know, and that was bad. That was really painful. So I didn't really speak to her ever again after that. And she passed away shortly after that. And I never really got to. So I don't know whatever happened to Trevor. Many years passed. And then Ancestry DNA popped up. And so I think this was 2017. So kind of fast forward from 2007, when I find out that Trevor is not my father, 10 years later, is when I kind of start catching wind of this Ancestry. I know Ancestry had been around before, longer than that, but never really interested me. It's only until when my mother passed away, 2017. I don't know what came over me, but I think it was when I was reading her journals, and that's when I kind of really started to, like, things started coming back to me and things that I didn't know before. Order this Ancestry kit. I see it online on one of these, like, mom groups on Facebook. A few years prior to that, I had actually been curious about it when my mother was still alive, but we weren't talking. So, and I knew I wasn't going to get anything from her, so I didn't ask her anything. But what I did do is I wrote to the children. So the Child Protective Services, they keep all these records of like kids that they've had in their system. And I thought, you know what, maybe there's something in there. So I wrote them and they sent me this file, which was a joke because 90% of it is all black marker. You can't even read half of it. But some of it was there and it had a lot of information about when I was surrendered and moving from place to place and the dynamic at home. And it talked about the living conditions and it talked about my sister that my mother had given up for adoption all those years before. And so I was able to actually find her. So we reunited about 7 years ago. So I did find my sister. She's living in another province and she has her own life and everything like that. So that was really nice. And I was able to do that in time before my mother passed away. So she was able to meet her mother, which was really beautiful. And then unfortunately, my mom passed away really shortly after that. But the point is, I got this file from the Child Protective Services and I'm, you know, scouring every page to see if there's anything at all in there about maybe who a mention of my father. I mean, even my mother's journals after she died, I'm like going through the page, like you should have seen me like a mad person. There's nothing in there. As a matter of fact, in the reports, it went on to talk about, oh, this biracial girl, highly complected. I'm like, is everybody on drugs? Like, they just took it for face value that my mother said, this is the father. And that was that. There was no questions asked and nothing in the reports, nothing at all. But, you know, I knew about a sister, but it wasn't really something in my mind. And so quite selfishly, actually, is I happened to stumble upon her again for a selfish reason, but it worked out really nicely that, you know, she was still reunited with the family and everything like that. She doesn't really keep in touch with us too much again, because once she met the crazy, she was like, yeah, no, I'm out. Peace. Like, this is too crazy for me. So she's like, no. I didn't get any information at that time about who my father could be. Found a sister, but not my father. My sister, when she started speaking to our mother, she did probe gently after getting to know her. You know, is there any way that you could know who Chantel's dad is? Because her and I got quite close, my sister and I. And my mother was, no, like I,
But I'll tell you what, she told my sister who her dad was in a heartbeat. She gave him the first and last name just like that. So part of me, I forgive my mother, and part of me feels that she really didn't know. I feel that it could have been she was drunk one day. I feel that she was so traumatized and like blacking out drunk that end with the prostitution. I mean, there must have been something, right? Like where she just didn't remember it, or she literally blocked it out of her brain. And because how could she recall 40 years later, first and last name, without a beat, without skipping a beat, just boom, yep, that's who your dad is. And she knew who my brother's dad is, obviously, but she couldn't tell me. So unfortunately, my mother has been always very sick her whole life. There's one thing or another, just every bad thing. She was just always sick. And I feel for her. She died in 2017. And then that was really hard. This is a very complicated relationship, right? So you don't know, am I grieving because I lost a mother? Or like, it was a very complicated, very strange feeling, very sad. So once some healing kind of took place, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to try and see if I can figure this thing out. Ancestry, got the kit, took the test, got the results, shows that I'm, the other half of me is Portuguese from the islands of the Azores Islands. So that would explain the dark hair and the dark eyes and the dark skin and everything like that. So I'm going to be really, this part will be short because I think I've spoken long enough, but reached out to a 500 centimorgan match on Ancestry, and she didn't want to help at all. I found her on Facebook. It took a lot of searching because she was using a different last name on Ancestry than she was on Facebook. And I found her, and I went through her friends list, and I found names that had the same name as her, last name as her. I messaged a couple of them. One person replied. That person agreed to take a test. That person matched me at 800 centimorgans, so I knew I was on the right track. She offered to test someone from her mother's side and someone from her father's side, because now we need to narrow it down. Tested someone on her mom's side, not that person doesn't match me, so now I know we match on her dad's side. Now her uncles are all either dead or very, very, very old or living far away. She sends me a picture of an obituary. She sends me the obituary of one of her uncles that. So we all grew up in Toronto, and her uncles immigrated to Canada from the Azores a long time ago. And so some of them moved off to Montreal. Some of them are in the, they've passed away. And there were a couple that stayed in Toronto. The uncle that she was going to test lived in Toronto, was very close with her family. And she didn't know he had passed away. So she sent me the obituary, and she said, oh, you know what? I was going to test this, my uncle. She sent me this obituary, and I swear to goodness, I'm looking at this. Picture of an old man, like, you know, he's got to be at least 70, and the eyes staring right back at me, and my blood just ran cold, because I'm like, I mean, he looks like a freaking axe murderer, but his eyes, and I've always had this insecurity because I don't like my eyes. I think I just feel like they're just really spooky. Like, and then I see these same eyes looking back at me, and I'm like, this is really weird. So I went on the obit. And I looked at the mess, you know, you can leave condolences. And I saw that a grandson and a daughter had left messages. Well, I found them on Facebook, and I messaged the grandson. I said, this is a situation. I'm in touch with your cousin. The families are huge. So he didn't even know who the cousin was. This uncle was one of like 13. So like there were just so many kids and cousins. And so grandson said, okay, I'll meet you. I said, I'll bring the test. Fine. Did the test. He comes back at over 900 centimorgans. I said, I think I'm on the right track. We need to test one generation up. Do you mind if maybe your mom or someone? So he agreed. His mom agreed. I'm really fast forwarding this, but there was a lot in between. Actually, I even joined a group on Family Tree DNA. I have like these subgroups where there's one for the Azores. It's like a community of people from this particular part of the world that, oh, you know, we do like genealogy research together. And if you have any tips or whatever information about, you know, ancestors from this region of this country, like they just share information and the culture. And it's just a way of preserving the culture and the heritage and connecting. And there was a moderator of that group, or the administrator for that group, reached out to me once she saw that because I put my DNA on every single site, because I'm like on a mission, right? Once I did it with Ancestry, I loaded it up on Family Tree, MyHeritage. Like I just put it everywhere. I had it on GEDCOM. I had it everywhere. I just get matches, right?
So yeah. She reaches out to me, the admin of the group, and she said, listen, you could be part of this group. And I said, listen, I can't offer you anything. I'm just finding out that I'm Portuguese. I had no idea. And she almost became like a lifeline for me. She helped me translate. Like, I'm telling you, this lady would pull records from archives and translate them for me. Like, we started building a tree back from, like, we did mirror trees and back from the, like, 1700s trying to come forward. So there were a lot of records and a lot of resources and tools being used to try and put together some kind of a tree based on my matches and their trees to try and piece this thing together. While simultaneously, I'm trying to reach out to people on Facebook and, you know, other social media platforms and, hey, we match on Ancestry and you didn't write, like, you know, I messaged you. I don't know if you're getting the messages. Can you reach out to me? I'm trying, you know, so this is all happening at the same time. And so the grandson meets me, takes the test, comes back 900. Now I'm talking to this lady from Family Tree DNA, this genealogist, and she said, Chantel, don't test his mom on Ancestry. At the time, Ancestry did not have a chromosome browser. Family Tree DNA did have a chromosome browser. Now I think Ancestry offers that. So this is important for people, well, for me and for my situation, because this man is dead. The man in question, who we think potentially could be my father, is no longer. If we're testing his daughter, she's going to come back around an 1800 range, which is either a grandmother, half sibling, or an aunt. The only way to differentiate that is between an aunt. We know she's not my grandmother, so it's either an aunt or half sibling. The only way to differentiate those relationships is if we share a full X chromosome. Ancestry doesn't offer a tool at that time to isolate the X, so we wouldn't be able to tell. So this is kind of getting a bit technical now, and really all that it is to say is that Family Tree DNA offered at that time a particular tool that could tell me whether she was my half sister or my aunt. She took the test on, so I got the Family Tree DNA kit. She did the test, came back, full X match. She's my half sister. Mm. And that was the confirmation. And so I found out a day before my 36th birthday. So I'm 40 now. And I contacted the cousin who helped me, the one that I found on Facebook, and I let the grandson know. Unfortunately, the grandson didn't accept that. It was very difficult for him to accept that his grandfather had an affair, because his grandfather had been married all those years. I don't know how my mother and my father met, but what I do know is that my father was in his 50s and my mother was in her 20s. The age difference, and I just want to leave the listeners with this piece, if I could, is that be careful when you're trying to figure out based on ages. That is not the best. I mean, it probably works out in the most cases that, okay, if you look at the age of a person, oh, he's in his 80s. There's no way that he could have been my father at that time, or blah, blah, blah. That's not always the case. Like, my father was literally in his 50s and he had sex with a woman in her 20s. He was married. I don't know what she was. She was with Trevor kind of on and off. I don't know. I don't know how they met. But then they conceived me. And so he had already had grown children by then. So my siblings on my father's side could be my parents. That's how old they are.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, he had three kids, two girls and a boy. The girls didn't accept, the boy did. And so now I have a beautiful relationship with my half brother's daughter and her family, so my niece. That's kind of how the story goes, Lily. Like, he's dead and gone. I won't know how they met, but I did find out who my father was. Thanks to, you know, DNA, Family Tree DNA, and my genealogist expert Sherry Mello from Family Tree DNA, and Berta, my cousin, who helped me so much, and I can never repay her for, just because I contacted lots of people, and they wanted nothing to do with it. And I will say that in hindsight, I probably shouldn't have reached out to that first 500 centimorgan match before doing my research and finding out what the best way to approach her was, because I kind of just like dumped that match and I'm like, oh, hey, I'm looking for my father and my da-da-da-da-da-da. And she's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, you come from a lot of chaos and I'm not about that. So she's like, nope, I'm out. I'm not helping you. But Berta, cousin, because now everything pieces together, right? Like, once you have all the matches and you find out, I found out who my father was and I found out how her and I match, like, everything fits together nicely as a complete puzzle now, like, with where everybody fits in my tree. But at the time, we didn't know what our relationship was, but it was like an 800 match. And she just went out on a limb for me. She sent a kit to the Azores to a cousin that she has out there. She tested someone on her mom's side who ended up passing away shortly after that. And I'm so grateful because that was the only surviving member, I think, on her mom's side that could have tested. So it isolated it. Kind of gave me that direction to know, okay, we're not matching on your mom's side, we're matching on your dad's side. And it was just, she sent me the obituary. I wouldn't have even known what name to search, you know, and I'm so grateful to these people. So even though there are some family members who don't accept me and kind of don't want to have anything to do with me, I'm at peace with that. I'm totally okay with it. The moment I found out, it felt like a burden was lifted, a weight was lifted. I swear to you, I felt like a different person. Like, even though I'll never have a relationship with him, I kind of sort of don't even care about that because I feel like as an adult, as a grown up, it's difficult to forge those relationships with complete strangers sometimes. And the stories that I've heard of him are really not the greatest. So maybe it's for the best that I didn't have a relationship with him. But I'm just grateful because I got a few pictures of him. I've gotten to know the family a little bit through my niece. I'm so much like them. It's not even funny. Like, I am nothing like my mother's family, and I am everything like my father's family. So just knowing that and having that, oh, it's like a sigh of relief. Like, that's why I'm like this, mm-hmm. or that's where I got my nose from. Which, side note, Lily, I had a big nose, and I was the only one in my mother's family that had this nose. And do you know that I had a nose job done in my early 20s because I was so insecure about my nose? I hated it. It looked like, and then fast forward, I find out where it came from and I regret having it done. I do. I regret having it done because now I know. Right. Isn't that crazy?
So yeah.
I will say just in closing that I struggle with forgiveness for my mother. I do. I forgive her, but I struggle with feelings of anger. I struggle with a lot of things that I never really had to have these didn't get to have these conversations with her. She's gone. Everyone's gone. You know, my father's gone. My mother's gone. I can't have these conversations, and I feel like she's had such a hard life that it's almost like I don't even have the right to be mad at her, which makes it so damn hard because it's like, you know, I can't even really fully be mad at her, but I am, you know, and I feel like I was wronged, and I feel like poor me in a way, you know what I mean? Because it's like, you know, I was this little girl who was pretty much orphaned and then like thrown around and abused and not cared for and lied to. And, you know, everyone was living their lives around me and I was just like trash to them. And then you get to die. And that's a horrible thing to say. Whatever wants to die. I'm not happy she died, but I'm just saying like, you're gone. And now you leave this mess behind. And I had to pick up all these pieces and figure this shit out without you. Like, you gave me zero, nothing, no information. You did not contribute positively to my life in any way whatsoever. And then I'm kind of left there to kind of figure it out on my own. So that part is really hard. But at the same time, I got the answer of who he is and that other piece. And I was able to fill in my kids, you know, the little baby books, and you write down who their mom and their dad is and their grandparents. Yeah. And I got to write all that in. And I got to show my son, who's 16 now, pictures. And he looks just like my father did at that age, which is insane.
Wow.
Picture. So all in all, I'm happy for the way that it turned out, but it has been a ride, let me tell you.
Yeah. Have you embraced, now that you found out you have this Portuguese descent, sometimes I hear about people trying recipes or reading books. Have you dived into that more?
You know, not really. I really identify so much with my Italian heritage because that's how I was brought up. I mean, I speak the language. It was a very unconventional. We don't have the traditional Italian family whatsoever. Like, they're all estranged. We don't have big get-togethers. We don't have, like, they're all screwed up. They don't go to church. They don't do, not to say you screwed up if you don't go to church. I'm just saying typically you got like an old Italian nonna. She has family over every Sunday for dinners and she's going to church and she wears black and she's constantly with the rosary. That's not her. She's still wearing like high heels and like shopping and like she's 90 and she's still alive. She's going to outlive every single one of us. My husband says that it's the hatred keeping her alive. She's like such a hateful person. Anyway, no, I haven't really embraced it. Like, I don't know. I kind of feel like okay with where I'm at. Like, if I hear something Portuguese, or if you're, you know, oh, this person's from the Azores, it's like, oh, cool. I have that little connection piece. It gives another layer of kind of complexity because when I am in a situation where someone asks me what's my heritage and they're Portuguese and I say I'm half Portuguese, how do I explain that I know nothing
about yes.
the Portuguese culture? That has yes. been difficult for me. Well, so you must know about this food. You must know about that. Yes. I had no idea what you're talking about.
Yep. So. That just happened to me this last week. Someone was Sicilian and they were saying to me, oh, and I said, oh, I just found out 4 years ago I'm part Sicilian. And they said, oh, where about? And I was like, I don't know anything.
Yeah. Please don't ask me.
Yeah. Oh, Chantel, if people wanted to get in touch with you, mm-hmm. I would be willing to do that, but would be the best way for emails or messages to come through?
Yeah. If you don't mind, they can contact you and then you can go ahead and okay with them reaching out to you? Yeah. And then I'm happy to answer any questions or if anyone's in a similar situation or has been, that'd be pretty cool to hear about.
Of course. If anyone has a message or a question for Chantel, they can email npestories@gmail.com for episode 185. And I will forward those along to you.
Thanks so much, Lily.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for, sometimes it's hard to remember and talk about this stuff and what we've been through. And you have been through a lot, as entire family has. Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story today.
Thanks for having me.
These stories are here for us to identify with. If you are an NPE and would like to share your story, email npestories@gmail.com. You do not have to give any identifying information. If you are an NPE and would like to share your story, I'd like to hear from you. Subscribe to this podcast to hear more. Come heal with us.